Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467369.
Welcome, 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 welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Woke Bros. I'm your gracious co-host, Big Waz. Of course, as always, my compadre, Michael Brooks. He's come with a special guest today. But before we get to that, I just want to remind everybody to, if you're in the Northeast Corridor, whether that be Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Tri-State, D.C. and Maryland, shout to my people in Baltimore, Philadelphia. Man, we taping this on a Wednesday. Y'all got waxed by Boston last night, man. I'm sorry for the Philadelphia people out there. Make sure you make your way to Cambridge, Massachusetts, the Middle East in Cambridge, man. Count the Dings live, featuring myself, of course, Amin El Hassan, Zach Harper, Tom Haberstroh, the evil producer Jade Hoy, Mariano, Black Trey, Rob Lopez, the junior producer in chief. The whole crew, man, Eden, Nitsan, everybody you've come accustomed to loving on the Count the Dings crew, man. They'll be in Boston. We actually locked in a couple of special guests. I'll be the first one. Well, the first to announce Henry Abbott, the founder of True Hoop, the God, the Godfather, man. If you care about this analytics game, man, it's probably because of Henry Abbott. We just locked him in as a guest. Of course, Pablo Torre, a.k.a. Pablo Bore, for those of you who like to watch the Levitar show. He's going to be in attendance. And we got a few more people coming through, man. But you definitely want to make sure to get your tickets. It's getting closer and closer to the dates. Them things is moving like hotcakes all of a sudden. I guess we got a bunch of lazy-ass fans, Mike. I don't know. These things came out in November. Now, all of a sudden, they procrastinating. Now they got to it. But, you know, make sure you get to Cambridge, Massachusetts, the Middle East, Count the Dings live on March the 2nd. And of course, man, just now on Twitter, boom, Michael Brooks, the TMBS crew, just announced the LA live show with the TMBS crew, man. Woo! We ready, man. Could you talk a little bit about that, Mike?
This is going to be a vicious show, and we're straight off of the, like, we packed the Bell House. It was an amazing success. We had such a good night. We had Alona, we had Bhaskar, who's here with me right now. We had Trevor Beaulieu, who also should be on this pod with us too. We had Mike Racine, and the LA lineup, like, there's going to be no sophomore slump. We came out, we hit a home run, we're coming out again, and we're going to clean up with Big Waz, my comrade, my brother, my fellow woke bro. He's there. Anna Kasparian, the incredible, multi-talented executive producer, co-host of the Young Turks there. Nando Vila, he's one of the best talk show hosts, political analysts in the game. You've seen his documentaries on Fusion and a lot of other cable and digital outlets. He's a brilliant dude. And there might actually be a fourth surprise guest, but that lineup right there just, I mean,
it's worth the price of admission, man.
Tickets. Like, what are you talking about? We're going to be doing it at the Bootleg Theater at April 20th, 4:20 show, Saturday, 8:30 p.m. You can get VIP tickets, same deal as New York, VIP tickets. You can hang out with us for a couple of hours before. A lot of people did that. I think almost 90-something, maybe 100 people did that in New York. We had a great time seeing everybody and the pictures and all of that. Will I be wearing an Italian suit or a tracksuit? You don't know yet. Is it Sicilian or Slavic? So get your tickets. Go to the Bootleg Theater. Click on the Michael Brooks Show. And also Eventbrite has them. And we'll be tweeting it out regularly. I always say this. Who knows? Maybe people will procrastinate. But, you know, literally, this got shout out to patrons last night. And just the first tweet up went up like an hour ago. And like, if the pace holds up, we'll be sold out like in a couple of weeks. So get them quick. Cause I know people, and then don't even like, forget about when Anna starts hyping it on TYT. Get them quick.
Yeah, and I want to say, Mike, since it's the L.A. show, you got to make a correction from Slavic to Italian. You got to do it Armenian to Persian, bro. That's That's most, the L.A. wave, brother.
Definitely. Well, I mean, Armenian tracksuit.
Trust me, the suits
I have, though, are not Persian looking.
Okay.
That is a different style. But I stand corrected, and certainly with the great Anna there, all love to the to the great LA Armenian community. All right, so with us on this expedition is Bhaskar Sunkara, and it's fucking crazy because he's actually a really good friend. Like you, this is actually a friend of mine who I do work with, but it's not just work. We actually hang out. And so I apologize if I fuck up your name, is my long roundabout way of saying that.
It's okay, man. I'm like what that Native American man told me in middle school. As long as you say it with respect.
Well, I say excessive respect and excessive
respect. And he worked for the Washington football team.
Yo, Bhaskar is the founder of Jacobin magazine. You've got to be reading it. Jacobin. You know, certainly in the political world and, you know, obviously Waz and I are regular readers, but I actually just want to make a really quick pitch that if you're just hearing about it for the first time, I'll just be blunt. If you hear a Marxist magazine with a name like Jacobin, like this comedian Frank Conniff, I was on a show with him recently and the host said, oh, and Michael has a new piece out for Jacobin. And Frank Conniff was like, yeah, I write for Jack Offabin. You know, like that's the people get. But I would say while Jacobin is incredibly smart and will give you a much better understanding of how the world works, it's well designed. It's pop literate. It's not trying to be stuffy and it isn't. So check it out if you haven't yet. Bhaskar is one of the most important, you know, of our generation's voices in politics. And he also happens, in addition to being a full-fledged dirty commie, like Waz calls me, and Waz is himself. Let's be honest.
Yeah, we can be honest. We can be candid Bhaskar here. That's what Black Opinions Matters for.
Right. Bhaskar is also the most committed Knicks fan I've actually ever met in my life. Like, I wonder, he's almost like the kind of guy who could like keep a mailbox, like a P.O. box at Madison Square Garden type of Knicks fan. And so I just wanted to open – I've been wanting to connect all of us for a while. You guys are both TMBS regulars in addition to liking each other's work anyway. But I just wanted to get this conversation started by saying is being a communist and being a Knicks fan, is that like, do you see that as part of the same thing, or is this just two sub personalities you have going
on?
Are
you asking me this, or are you asking Bhaskar? Because it's so obvious. Has to be the same thing.
But you could jump in anytime, man.
Well, you know, I wouldn't even call, I don't call myself a communist. You know, I'm a
You're a communist.
Come on,
I'm trying to sex it up for the show. Socialism has no danger anymore.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, I would say that I have a lot of patience, you know. I believe in the lost cause. I believe in the underdog. You know, that's my only consistent part of my politics, is I believe in kind of redemption. Like either, you know, a good Christian or right. a bad communist, you know, same thing. And even right now, I trust the leadership. You know, that's the most communist part about being a Knicks fan. I'm like, wow, not Dolan. You know, Dolan's a scumbag. But this Scott Perry guy, you know, his New Orleans drawl, you know, I trust him.
You just trust him.
Yeah, I trust him. You know, they say Porzingis is the god one day. I'm like, yes, sir. Get my Porzingis. The next day, like, Porzingis and his brother Giannis, these fucking ungrateful Europeans are in there causing trouble. I'm like, get them out. You know? Yeah. I'm in it for the experience. I don't even want them to win necessarily. I'm in for the ride.
Wait, you're so crushed that you don't even want them
to win? Well, listen, I'm 29 years old. I'm going to be 30 in June. There's 30 teams in the NBA. I think there's a good chance that I will not live to see the Knicks win a championship. So I'm just preparing for that outcome, you know? But like a Christian, you know that Christ is coming and all that shit is going to happen. I don't know. I'm not myself a student of the good book, but, but you know, I know that one day there will be a victory.
What Waz told a really interesting story recently about his very intellectually driven flip to atheism.
Hey, man, I'm just being honest and truthful.
That's the best.
Honest and truthful. And just to repeat the story so Bhaskar can have some context, we were doing sex ed in my Catholic school in eighth grade, and it was sex ed through the prism of what it means to know the rules of sex as a Christian, right? Through the prism of a Christian. So basically it's like, you know, obviously no sex till marriage, you know, any kind of sexual act with another person that even inside the marriage, any sexual act that happens without that completely takes out the possibility of having a kid is out of question. So it's like using a condom with your wife is technically a sin. It's like all of these technical,
I agree,
very technical things. I know, right? All these very technical things were being explained to me. And then I asked Father Malagreca, Monsignor Malagreca, I said, because the pastor of our church was actually our teacher, by the way. I said to him, so what about masturbation? Is that a sin in the eyes of the Lord? And he was like, yes, of course. It's a sexual act, not in the service of procreating, you know. And that's basically when I decided I had to become an atheist.
That's such a better, you know, because I don't actually identify myself as an atheist anyways. I really am an agnostic, but like just the amount of like nerdy, like, and that's when I discovered that, you know, the Bertrand Russell,
it's clear as day for me,
could not be refuted by biblical. And you're just like, don't jerk off. I'm 14.
Like, that's crazy. Like the idea that
that is the most healthy, sane response to religious repression. Like that should actually just be basically the global critique of religion. So Waz, how do you say bro in Creole?
Bro? I mean, yeah. Partner, which is partner. Just, you know, yeah, which like, is just the greatest right? person of saying partner. Partner.
Partner.
Yeah. Partner. Yeah.
So how do you connect being a Bernie partner with the Knicks?
With the Knicks? That's tough. Well, you know what? Actually, it's not that tough because Bernie is so ascendant. And if you're a Knicks fan and you've been reading the tea leaves, it seems like they're going to win this summer. Like, it really, really seems like it. Like, if, and I'm somebody who's not a Knicks fan, right? Like, I say it all the time. Like, I want to see the Knicks do well because a lot of the people who I care about in my life love the Knicks. So I want to see them happy. Like,
wait, who you root for?
I don't root for anybody.
You don't root for anybody because
I'm also a basketball. Not even. I just stopped caring about that kind of thing a long time ago. I'm just a basketball atheist too. I'm, you know, what I'm saying, I'm consistent, Michael. If not anything else, you know.
Yes, that's true.
But Bernie is so obviously ascendant. He's so obviously on the right path. He's so obviously tapped into something, right? The Knicks and like you said, Scott Perry and Steve Mills, and by the way, Fizdale, the first triumvirate of his kind, the first president, GM, and head coach ever in the history of American basketball that's never happened before, which is another like kind of cool wrinkle about what the Knicks are doing right now.
That's one good thing Dolan did. Dolan always hires black front office execs and promotes people. You know, that's, you know.
Always. He's just a sucker for just slick black dudes, man. It's ridiculous. He's
so
like white.
So that why way. Don't you? So why do you not like what?
Wait, what was that? Why do I not?
Sexual harassment of the black women. You know. Well,
right. Well, he is Dolan.
Yeah, no, he is Dolan. But no, the Knicks just seem to be trending in all the right ways. Even if you're paying attention to what happened a few weeks ago with Kyrie, where there was this uproar where he's like, you know, no, I don't know what I'm going to do on July 1st, right? Like, my contract is going to be up. A bunch of teams are going to request my services. I think I'm going to hear people's offers. And that started an uproar. And, you know, KD, the Knicks clear up a bunch of cap space, which leaves them their books completely clean, able to sign whomever they want, whoever's willing to take their money. And KD spends the next 10 days not talking to media. Right? Like, just that act, just the mere act of the Knicks doing that, this guy preemptively stopped talking to the media. Like, it just seems to be going in the right direction for both parties.
Yourself to feel a little hope, a little bit of a tremor?
No, I feel good. I feel good. I just wonder.
The God body returns.
Hold on. We got one more thing. KD's 35 Media, whatever his production company is. Mind you, most people put their production companies in L.A. because most productions happen in L.A. He bought office space in New York. I don't know what else to tell you guys, bro.
No one just buys office space in New York. And this is, by the way, this is actually a good time. I'm going to shoehorn in. NBA players are privileged workers, but absolutely are workers. Because the only people that, like, just buy office space in New York because what the hell are like Russian oligarchs. Like, even if you're KD, wouldn't you just say like, yeah, let me just do that. It's cold. It's overly expensive. It's actually inconvenient relative to LA for basic production stuff. Like, that's a very strong signal from a real estate perspective.
It just doesn't make any sense. Like, those Russian oligarchs are doing it because it's like, why don't I park money in the US?
Right.
Because Vladimir Putin might one day decide I don't deserve to have money anymore and I'll have that. Like, it's obvious why they're doing that, right? With KD, it's a lot less obvious. And obviously his business manager, partner, agent, whatever you want to call him, Rich Kleiman, is a New York guy. I don't know. I don't know how else to put this. This seems like it's happening. And so does Bernie.
How do we get in on being one of these, like, business partners, managers, one of these stars? Because, like, half this guy seem mediocre as hell. It's like, you know, I don't know.
Oscar, I literally had this conversation this morning with a friend who's tapped into that world over there in the Bay Area. And he's just like, the crazy thing is Rich Kleiman is an amateur at this particular thing. The only reason... Literally the reason why you ask, it's important that you know this. The reason why he has that job is because he worked at Roc Nation with Jay-Z back when they were only a music thing. He literally used to manage Wale. Jay-Z opened a sports division. He let him manage Kevin Durant, and here we are.
I'm just like, as you tell that story, I'm picturing Dame Dash going into like anaphylactic shock.
Exactly.
And Lior Cohen. But
seriously, though.
He actually was a genius, Dame Dash.
Okay, make the case for Dame Dash.
Well, look where he put a lot of his money into. It was about supporting smaller artists. He had a bunch of ambitious ideas that were had his heart in the right place about, you know, giving studio time to up-and-coming artists, things like that. You know, maybe he was a bad businessman.
Do you remember, actually, because I think this was a little bit, like, I don't know, actually, you would have been invited to one of these, too, but it was a little while ago. I know Waz came to one. Do you remember those communion parties that we used to that Phil and I used to organize?
Yes, I remember. Yep.
Yeah. So one of the our partner on that was this really brilliant dude, Chuck Welch. Okay. Who's like he's like a brand strategy, culture strategist guy. I think it's Culture Rupture is his thing, but he actually had a piece recently, and I don't remember whether he wrote it himself or it was somebody else that he was tweeting out, but it was all about how, like, the wrong lessons in hip-hop from Dame Dash. And it was, like, basically because of the pure capitalism of rap lyrics and of a certain type of rap and, like, just the kind of, like, victor goes the spoils discourse. And like not having room for, you know, just like the more complicated reality of somebody like Dame Dash, that a guy who actually was really successful and really important, like he became like a laughing stock when.
Yeah, stupid. It's stupid because people just don't really understand the story, right? The bottom line is a lot of the things that has enriched Jay-Z. Whether it be his liquor brand, whether it be Rockefeller Records, period, whether it be Rock Aware, which he ended up selling to the Russians for like $180 million. All of these things were ideas pioneered by Dame first, right? The founding of Rock Aware was Dame's idea. It was like, Jay, we make sure that shit like Iceberg and Air Force Ones fly off the shelf, Yankee hats. We can just make clothes, right? And that's what they did. And it ended up being a very successful endeavor.
I'll go really nerdy here for a second though. Sure. I always found I think it's on You Don't Know. The fact that he would found his own clothing label after he dissed Dapper Dan like that. Remember that?
I mean, that's a little bit different. Dapper Dan was just straight up making fake clothes, right? Like,
I understand he was making fake clothes, but at the same time, like, that's the Dame Dash principle. You could take it as he was just making knockoffs uptown, or you could say, that's a pretty resourceful guy who had an interesting small business and outfitted like everybody in the late 80s. And by the way, Sonia Sotomayor is part of the reason that Dapper Dan got taken down.
Damn,
I think she's part of the legal team on copyright infringements or something. Yeah, New York is crazy. It's so incestuous.
But yes, yeah, so you know, Dame's business savvy and acumen and the adamance that everything they did that they got to own all of their stuff. Like they were huge on ownership, like all of these principles that Jay-Z now, you know, will tell you, like, I don't move without these principles. They were pioneered by Dame from the start, where, you know, people who got in the game to manage or whatever and artists and all of that, like, they jerked a lot of artists. Dame was a guy that, like, actually empowered a lot of people. And, you know, he is the guy that took a chance on Kanye. He is, like, he pioneered a lot of these things. Again, like you said, he's a complicated guy. He's a flawed guy like all of us. And he did have some clown aspects to him. But, I mean, the guy's resume unimpeachable, in my opinion.
When you guys think about, I agree. I think it's also like this time period we're in would be the time where somebody where like Dame Dash would probably start to at least culturally like get his due for a variety of reasons, including like I think even the ways that he, like I think his emotionalism is actually probably more acceptable right now, in terms of just like clickable content even, which is really cynical way of talking about it, but I think it's true. But I was just thinking before, like we were talking about like the NBA and fan culture, and we have like the complete contrast here of Mr. Waz, who at 14 is like willing, like I will throw Genesis on the floor. If I can't rub it to Foxy Brown, I reject over 2,000 years of teaching and culture, my friend. Like, and then on the other, we have Bhaskar, who's like bringing an almost like Soviet mentality to supporting the Knicks.
Well, I mean, you know your team is bad, right?
Right.
But you know what's going to happen after is going to be even worse, right? You know, like literally the Putin is basically running the Brooklyn Nets. Like, I can't get down the road.
Of course
that place
not.
Is a hellhole.
Oh, no. None
it's
of us.
Super dark. It's steep. You know, I almost tripped and fell last time I was at the Brooklyn Nets. Imagine if I was, like, an older person. forgot who. Maybe someone said that, like, the Nets were trying to kill poor people.
Oh, they literally.
Because they had the Staples Center lighting, but nothing else from the Staples Center.
I know. Everything about that project is meant to kill poor people. There's no doubt about that. But my question is like, when you take it to politics, it's really interesting because like I feel like the thing a couple years ago was like the quote unquote serious people, and you still see that, like they still are just like, you know, Howard Schultz is walking around and they're still disproportionately represented in cable news. But that's whole like, oh, you know, I just call it like I see them, and you know, you're not supposed to be passionate about anything. And now it's like I see a split where I see some people have gotten really passionate about actual things like everybody needs to get health care. We need to reform the police. We need to, you know, move off of the carbon economy. We need to stop killing people overseas or, you know, whatever it is, like a passion for actual things. And then on the other hand, some of the political discourse that I see on especially Twitter, I will say, it's like, dude, why are you not rooting for the Knicks or just like sharing Cardi B pro, like, because if you would want to be like a fan of like a part of fan culture and relate to it as a personality cult, why not sports or music? It's better than politics. I mean, is what I'm saying make any sense, Bhaskar?
Well, I think for one thing, if anything, among a lot of young people on political Twitter, I think there's even like they go to the extreme of not having enough loyalty.
That's true.
So it's often like, yeah, they were really into Bernie in 2016, but now they're like, oh, what about this Bernie? What about this? Oh, there's a big controversy and Bernie hasn't written a statement. You know, people freaked out about Bernie's statement on Venezuela. Whereas the Venezuelan government, Maduro, reposted it and was like, oh, you know, a statement of support from Bernie Sanders. It was like a mixed statement, like it should be, right? Or you should say nothing, because it's like he has nothing to gain by venturing into this and it could be used against him. But I think loyalty and a certain level of kind of discipline and a manner of engagement that's positive and whatnot is lacking, partially because a lot of these spaces are very middle class and they're particularly white middle class. Not white people are different, but because some of our cultures still have feudal aspects.
Right.
Like, you know, my family was not middle class, but I myself grew up, you know, middle class. They were, you know, moving on up in the U.S. But, you know, I still have some feudal aspects to my culture. You know, my, dad or mom is saying something, you know, I won't talk back to them. You know, little things
like that. Fuck you, mom. Yeah. Bernie fucking didn't write a statement at 3 a.m. that conformed to all of the demands of the DSA sub-caucus for the plenary order of... Yeah, I know what you're saying. But I guess what I meant is not even necessarily... Like, I mean, I don't know. I want Waz to talk about loyalty. I agree with you 100%. But I guess what I meant is not even like... To me, a personality cult could also be negative. Yeah, in the sense that like all you're doing is filtering politics through like your own really small set of preferences, which you think subsume the whole world. And then it's either like Bernie's the boss, AOC's the savior, or it's like, oh, well, he didn't do that and she failed to do this. So fuck them. They're done. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and that's the same way you would say like, oh, well, I don't like that new record. Like, no, I don't like that new download.
You can imagine what these people's dating lives are like. Probably, they're just used to being like, all right, you know, on to the next one. And
you're imagining that they have dating lives. That's, right. You know, and to me, that's the I don't know. A lot of this is related to something that I feel oftentimes when I'm on the internet. It's like, how many of these people have been punched in the face before? Right? Like have been in a real fight before, like where it's just like, you know, you take your lumps and you go home and then you get up in the morning, you do something else and move on with your life. Like this lack of, you know, not to put virtue into like maintaining a support for a politician, even somebody who I admire as much as Bernie Sanders. It's just like, these people just haven't been through anything, right? And the thing about Bernie that I feel like kind of fucks it up too is that Bernie technically didn't lose to them last time, right? Which I think for like in a weird way, and he's kind of been rewarded for losing in the sense that he's become the biggest shit we've seen in a while in the party. And I think like that warps their thinking about this, where they're just like, I'll have another Bernie. And it's like, no, you won't.
Right.
This is like, no, you will not. Like, this is important. Like, this shit has to happen right now. It's not guaranteed that another Bernie will come around.
We need 150 years for one Bernie.
I mean, listen, like, just think about something, a politician like Mondale and Clinton. Like, you would think, oh, we're going in the Mondale direction. No, we're not. We're headed to fucking Clinton, bro. We're headed towards the crime bill. We're headed towards welfare reform. That shit could turn on a dime. And I think a lot of these young kids don't get that. They don't understand that intuitively. Like, yo, the importance of this, the importance of, like, you know what, man? We need to stick by this guy, even at the risk of being part of some cult of personality. Because at the end of the day, like, the cult of personality is trying to do what? Is he trying to invade Poland? No. He's trying to give us healthcare. And to your point, Bhaskar, like, they just don't get it. They don't get it fundamentally. Like, the idea that you could drop Bernie Sanders because he's no longer socialist enough for you, like, it's insanity to me.
Yeah, and some of these kids were voting for Hillary Clinton 2 years ago. Right. You know what I mean? It's like the zeal of the new convert. Like, it happens with everything, right?
Yeah, it's it's kind of like as frivolous as pop culture, but as heavy and as disturbing as like being in a cult. And I think, that's really true. And I just also like, I've been having a hard time talking about Bernie because, and you know, like I'll wear it, you know, like, oh, like Mike's a Bernie bro. He loves Bernie, whatever. And it's like, yeah, I do. Like, you give me a reason to not like him. I'm very adaptable. You know, like, I think I am loyal, but I'm not, you know, I'm definitely not set in stone. But to me, it's like, anytime I hear a good critique of Bernie that is smart and credible, it's always from somebody who is actually basically still generally kind of supportive of him, or it's like true, but it has nothing to do with like, you know, what's happening in politics. Like, I remember, I mean, the most wild example of this to me was, and I don't want to drag 2016 up, but like, you know, Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote that piece about Bernie and reparations. And I don't even actually care to get into that piece one way or another. I just thought it was amazing that Clinton people were running around with that piece. And I would ask them, I'd be like, wait, did I miss? Like, is there a Marcus Garvey vertical on Hillary Clinton's website that I didn't see? Because my understanding is that she definitely does not support reparations. And in fact, if we're being real, you know, the redistribution Bernie's talking about would actually be a huge transfer you know, of resources partially significantly across.
And Coates knew that. That's why he voted for Bernie.
And right, exactly. And the person who also did know this was Ta-Nehisi Coates, who did in fact say, you
but
know,
that's politics, though. That's politics, though, Mike. Like, and we talked about this, when the Russian hackers and bots wanted to convert people, they didn't have to do much. Right? Like, when you really go into the quote-unquote rat-fucking that these Russians may or may not have done, there was nothing intricate about it. there wasn't like three layers of precision and like just genius. It was just basic, just any run-of-the-mill stupid lie that could be disproved in 10 seconds, that could be made look stupid in 10 seconds, and it worked. That's why the Clinton people were like, oh, this sounds anti-Bernie, let's go with it. Because the shit works. You know, as stupid as that is, it works, bro.
It's
you
know, that's how they cloud around someone, too.
Right.
Like, people don't really know that what's wrong with Bernie, but they know that something must be wrong. Oh, there's something.
You
know?
Well, no, yeah, I've heard that's the thing. Like, I've had so many conversations where, and because it gets comical with him, because it's like, again, you know, I guess, you know, like there's been times where he's given some bad answers or he's taken some a few bad votes, less than anybody else he's up against. But then it's like, you know, you just like people are pulling clips of him from the 80s and the guy's fucking campaigning for Jesse Jackson.
And then it's like Kamala Harris goes in the Breakfast Club and lies about listening to Tupac, right? Like
Harris goes on the Breakfast Club and literally is first does the most hack, like my family Jamaican may take an herb from a tree, like hack, like fucking, and then says, well, weed brings joy. And I've got no point. I was like, well, right, but you're Mrs. quote Bob Marley. You put people in prison for that joy. You destroy people's lives. I mean, it's not even just like, and this is where I'm really relativist, to be honest with you. It's like, if you told me that Barack Obama cast some bad votes on drugs, you know, I would disagree and I would say it's a valid thing to talk about. But it's also a different thing than personally locking them up. Yeah. And anytime you talk about I mean, that's another thing with people who've gotten in for Bernie is it's like, well, with Bernie, there's just something wrong and it just is what it is and they can never define it. And actually, when they try to define it, ironically, they usually end up sounding, if I wanted to play this game myself, I would say borderline to full on anti-Semitic. And then like, he's grouchy and he yells, you know, like, oh, okay. And then on the flip side, when it comes to, you know, like any other can't, you know, even like Biden or whoever, it's always like, oh, well, you know, at the time we needed to lock everybody up, you know. And now the most insane woke take I heard, and we did this in my post game the other day, was like, and I just want to get on this for a second and see what you guys think of this. If Amy Klobuchar, because this is my new response to every, almost like every scandal right now, unless it's like just, you know, truly beyond the pale, you know what I'm saying? But if Amy Klobuchar came out and said, you know, I was a horrible boss, I was really abusive, and I recognized that, you know, and I actually began a process to improve, bless you, and I've taken responsibility for it. You know what my follow-up question would be if she said that? It would be like, what do you think of the Green New Deal? Because I would drop it completely. But she came out and she said, I'm hard on my staff because like I want big things for like myself and America, like completely unrepentant for abusing people. And then there's a segment on MSNBC where these like this is like if you were writing a sketch to undermine legitimate feminist critique, like of course women candidates are held to different standards. Of course there's a different application if a woman goes out and says a certain thing than a man. But they were literally saying, like, oh, this is just her being a strong boss. And if a man did it, he would be called like tough and strategic. I was like, no. If you told me that Bernie Sanders threw binders at people, I wouldn't say like, well, that's another example of his real
strength. Nah, you can't. You got to be like, yo, Bernie, man, we want to see you get better at this.
Oh, my God. I mean, those arguments are just getting, I don't even know, stupid, like demented at this point.
Bhaskar, I want to ask you something though, really quick, because this kind of stuff always fascinates me. I remember I was reading an interview with Scarface, the rapper from Houston, and the interviewer was like, "Yo, you know, you ever feel like you're glorifying drugs in your music?" And he's like, "No, absolutely not, because I actually did that shit." And what he said was, "I remember when being a drug dealer wasn't cool." Like, your mans, your two homies on your block, their parents didn't want them to hang out with you. Like, you couldn't go in their yard. Like, the shit wasn't cool. Like, you were ostracized. You were made to feel that way. Do you ever feel like that being a democratic socialist in 2019? It's like, you know what I mean? Like, what's it like to go from the early days, the heady days, right? Where it's like, literally, people call you... Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
I would say it's funny they were asking Scarface this. None of his lyrics are glorifying drugs. None of the ghetto boy stuff is that either, you know?
No, that's wrong.
Yeah, but that's what he's saying, right? He's like, just because I'm talking about drugs, it's like he's like, I can't glorify drugs because I know what it's like to be that person who's done that. There's nothing glorious about it. You know, that's what his point was to the interview. Like, well, basically calling the guy stupid. But, you know, but like, what's it like to go from what you've seen it be, where literally commie was a cuss word, or it was like, it was in the range of words that you use for somebody when you want to just completely disparage them, dismiss them, make them useless, to now where it's like, it's, I don't want to say it's the thing, but it's a thing that matters and people have to take it seriously.
Yeah, I think for me, the key thing is not to treat it like a subculture. Don't treat it like, hey, I know something. I know more than you. I've been around for longer. I know the lingo better. You're misusing it. The kind of condescension that could easily come from, you know, knowing something a little bit, you know, more and having a little bit more experience. And obviously, the key thing for me, I was talking to Michael about this earlier. Like, I am probably less secure in my politics than I was in the past, you know, because it's kind of like the cycle of being a kid. You know, you're 16, 17 years old. You are convinced you figured it all out, you know, and then obviously by the time you hit your late 20s, you're less certain. Right. Even as you actually have seen a lot more of life. I think the same thing should go for someone's political evolution. And I think a lot of the new socialists are in this kind of teenage phase, or they remind me of my nephew, who I like put onto stuff, and then like 2 months later he clearly just like read a Wikipedia article and he's telling me about, you know,
how it is.
Yeah, yep. Or like AZ's first album. I'm like, I gave you that album like 2 years ago.
AZ's first album's underrated.
Yeah, no, it's a great album. It's better than Reasonable Doubt. Just kidding. No, I don't actually think that. Jesus Christ.
I like that take. I'm not mad at that take at all. I just wanted to see Waz get a hissy fit going.
And when we were kids, he was in all the Sprite commercials. Like, AZ was commercial.
Yeah, AZ was a big deal.
He needed a better manager. He needed a Puffy or a Dame.
A Dame,
I talked to somebody once who knew, it was a weird, I literally talked to a guy who knew AZ at like a yoga retreat. It's a long story, but he told me, this is already probably like 12 years ago or something. I was really young. He was like, he said, you know what it is? He said, AZ gets how good he is, but he doesn't really get how good he is. I thought that was fascinating.
Like, well, it's very simple, Mike.
Ego, and he knows he's cool and he knows he's talented, but he doesn't really get that he could be great.
Because here's the thing about a guy like a guy like Dame Dash, a guy like Puff, a guy like Bernie. People talk shit about self-promotion. Not everybody has the fucking stomach for it. Right. Like, everybody can go. It's not like Bernie's the first person to want to espouse these ideas. But he's like, you know what? I can get in front of a camera and make this shit about me and these ideas and I can sell it. Not everybody does it. Not everybody has it within them. Right. Like, people talk shit about certain skills and abilities. But like at the end of the day, you can't do what DJ Khaled does. Even if you tried, you wouldn't have the stomach to just embarrass yourself in public to do all of these things. Sometimes, like, that's the bottom line. You need somebody who's going to promote, who is going to promote shamelessly, tirelessly. you know, from dawn till dusk, right? And those people are special. I'm sorry, man. Like, not everybody has the ability to do what Bernie's doing for the messages that he's trying to carry him and put forth. You know, there's been plenty of people who wanted to give people health care. There's been plenty of people that want to make college more affordable. Plenty of people who want to get at, you know, all these tax havens and how often these rich people get to get off scot-free without contributing a fucking dime to what we do around here as a society. But not everybody has the fucking gumption or the stomach for it, man. And, you know, even somebody like Puff or Dame, and, you know, as crazy as it is, I'm comparing Bernie to them. But it's just this, it's the same two sides of the same coin, man. It's like getting out there, being loud enough, being brave enough to take the bullets because you're going to be the one out front. So you're going to take the hits. Like, yo, it's important.
But being a great MC isn't the same thing as making great music. Like, right. Even like Nas,
I think that too.
No, but I would say hands down, Nas is a way better MC than Jay-Z. I'm a huge Nas fan. I probably have to admit by now, especially looking at the end of their career, the final third. You know, Jay-Z makes better music that stays relevant.
I'm telling you, the argument for me has actually always come down to this: that I just don't think, as a rapper, as an MC, that Nas is beatable when he's at his best by anybody. But yeah, I mean, in terms of a total music package, I don't know if it's as clear as that, but I mean, that is a much bigger question mark for me, but as a Nas stan.
But it does connect to the Bernie thing, because even if you look at Bernie, right, he uses the most simplistic vocabulary of any presidential candidate. He repeats the same lines over and over again. He took his version of socialist thought that he learned back in the 60s and 70s, and even a little bit before that, and he has stuck to it. He's refined it. He's turned it into talking points. You know, he's not a man who reads much. You know, he doesn't seem like that kind of super heady intellectual that the socialist left is used to. And that's a good thing. That's definitely why he's better. He's been honing and perfecting a craft and figuring out how to connect with people. And he's been spending less time on policy. And that makes
I think
more
what you're saying is that Chomsky couldn't have done this.
Yeah.
I got a question. Actually, that's a good way to round up, to maybe end this, but we should definitely do more of these. But Chris Ryan asked me on his show, tangentially speaking, which Chris Ryan's an interesting dude, so shouts to him. But he asked me, he said, do you think that the world would be a different place if Noam Chomsky had the charisma of Howard Stern?
I think he kind of does. He is anti-charisma. I think
he's got the charisma of how.
Yeah. Well, no, someone's telling me, oh, you know, Noam Chomsky has a young wife. You know, I'm like, you know, I'm email buddies with him, but I don't really know him. So I was like, oh shit, I don't know what's going on.
He's got a young wife.
I found out his wife is like in her late 50s. I know for him that's young, but it's not like people are making it sound like he's having sex with like a 20-year-old.
No.
I mean, I don't know if he's still up for it anymore.
There's a good video. She's a Workers' Party activist, I think.
Yeah, she's cool.
She was translating for him after he visited Lula in prison and called correctly Lula the most prominent political prisoner in the world. But all right, but Wise, don't give me the anti-charisma cop-out. We know what we mean when we say Howard Stern charisma.
No. I'm just saying I think the difference between – I'm not saying Noam Chomsky has no charisma. I just don't know that he has the stomach to be a politician. Like, that shit, man, it takes a certain gutlessness at a certain point to do this shit. Like, honestly, like, that's what it comes down to. And I think with Howard, the thing about the difference between Howard and Chomsky is that, like, Howard will say shit that pisses you off in such a way that you like it. Noam Chomsky's is gonna piss you off. He's just gonna piss you off. He's not gonna make you like the fact that he's pissing you off, then he's exposing this thing, you know, that you don't want to confront, right? Whether it be as a society or as an individual. I think Howard has always just been good at getting people to like the what is perceived to be wild shit that he says, you know, like he's just always been good at that.
Remember the way I answered that question and wrap up, and true shameless fashion was I said, well, we're about to find out. I'm such an asshole. All right. Guys, this was so good. Obviously, if you haven't yet, you've got to subscribe to Woke Bros. Don't miss a single episode of Woz Night or the Monday Black Opinions Matter show, which is also great, obviously. You can find me, of course, at the Michael Brooks Show, TMBS. We are, as of now, we're 9 away from our first 2,000 patrons. You get a ton of extra content. Patreon yourself up, patreon.com/TMBS. And you'll hear both, of course, Woz and Bhaskar are there regularly this Friday, actually. Special edition because we're off next week of TMBS and Woz is going to be calling in. I'll throw to you in a second, Woz, for all the other important, amazing Count the Ding shows. One of them I was mentioning earlier, back to back with Woz's masturbation conversion. but besides that, get your tickets. There's no, I mean, especially if you're a Woke Bros listener, it would be insane to miss the Michael Brooks live show April 20th at the Bootleg Theater with Woz, Anna Kasparian, and Nando Vila. Go to the bootlegtheater.org and get your tickets there. There's also Eventbrite tickets, and we'll be tweeting it out. They're going quick. And of course, we'll have a link in the description, so snack them up. As quickly as you listen to this pod, while you're listening to this pod, go buy that. And also, stop being fucking lazy. The idea of seeing Woz in Boston is innately funny.
Yes, I need to go see my brothers, man. My spiritual brothers in the Mecca of the white American bro, man. I gotta go see those brothers out there, man. And sisters too. I'm gonna say hi to the sisters as well.
Hi, Woz. Hi. You're so funny.
But yeah, man, just make sure you guys get your tickets ASAPly, man. Those things are moving fast.
Don't you think that you shouldn't be a ball hog though? Seriously?
Yeah.
You ready for Boston, man?
That's why we love the socialists and the communists, brother. Is that what's about? It's not hogging that ball, brother. It's about not hogging them billions now. Spread the wealth now. yeah, man, just make sure y'all get those tickets March 2nd. That should be dope. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. We want to cheat this damn algorithm. Bring our shit to the top of the pops, man. And that's for this show, of course. Obviously, you're listening to the Bomb Feed. Go out there, subscribe to the Daily Ding, as well as Kian Fahey's NFL Pod, The Interceptable with Zach Harper, The House of Strauss with Ethan Show with Strauss and Packing Knives with Tom Haberstroh and Kevin Arnovitz, man. For Bhaskar, for Michael, I'm Big Woz. We will see you guys next week.
Just real quick, Jacobin Magazine, we'll have a link to it, all the ways you can find Bhaskar. You can read his columns all over the place, including even fucking New York Times sometimes. Find him, we'll have a link for that. Frankly, this show should be getting really big. I'm just going to say it bluntly. So like, review, and share. Peace and love, everybody. Thank you.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.